Here we are, Cinema Squabble, episode 22, if you're keeping track at home. For those of you keeping track at home and score at home. The double deuce. Yeah. How you doing? I'm Adam Gerke. With me here in studio, Brian Zitzelman of The Examiner.
What's up?
Sarah Michelle Fetters, who comes to us from Seattle Gay News, also moviefreak.com. What do? Who are we? We are a number of Seattle's film critics. And every week, in fact, this was happening just last night, we bicker, we squabble, we fight about films in the theater, and now we bring that discussion to you, so you can listen to this on your bus ride or on your commute home or wherever you might happen to be. So thank you much for joining us. You can find us at cinemasquabble.com. You can also find us at iTunes if that's where you found us. Thank you very much. Give us the stars and the likes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So 2 weeks since we last gathered in this very studio. And a lot has happened. We had one of the best weeks on...
The last time we recorded, it was one of the best weeks we've had all year. Steve Jobs, Crimson Peak, Bridge of Spies.
I miss an episode. Yeah. It's like everything that's out is like good and I want to talk about. And then
Victoria.
It's like,
we're going to talk about one of your movies that technically opened that week. We're going to do that a little later.
But so we had one of the greatest weeks, followed by last week, which I think just a giant red slash through the whole thing. It did.
Really? I mean, if you look at Box Office Mojo, I mean, I don't know if these movies actually exist.
If they even charted. So there were the big ones. The big ones from last week being Rock the Casbah, Bill Murray, and then also The Witch Hunter and Gem and the Hologram.
Hey,
Which has technically a sequel posted on IMDb. I wonder how long that's going to stay there.
Really?
You think that's going to disappear?
It'll be by the City of Bones sequel.
One of the biggest losses so far in Hollywood.
Year?
That what it was? Yeah.
Was it 80, 90 million budget?
So the surprise of the bunch, I think, for straight up terrible, has got to be the Bill Murray movie, right?
Yeah, it really was.
Bill Murray doesn't make a ton of films, let alone ones where he's the lead. And to have one come out like Rock the Casbah that I'm not sure we can all agree on how bad it is, but is at least...
Yeah, I didn't think it was terrible.
At best, lackluster. I would I would go terrible. And it's not for lack of trying. I think it's a movie with its heart in the right place. It's the Bill Murray is a kind of rock producer, manager who goes to Afghanistan and is trying to manage some people, doesn't work out, and ends up helping a local woman who's trying to make it onto their kind of equivalent of American Idol. Afghan star. Heart in its right place, but thudding, not funny. Bruce Willis looks so bored in like 10 minutes of this movie. Kate Hudson has a dumb hat on.
Yeah.
But she's actually, I like that she's actually giving a performance in this film. She
tries. She's kind of Jennifer Aniston and kind of boring.
And on the heels of St. Vincent, where I thought Bill Murray was so good, this just rings so... uninspired. Even the outtake scene that they have in the credits at the end where he's bargaining with an Afghani man in a market.
I walked out. I couldn't make it through that.
I sat there and I'm going, this is actually painful. This makes me like I'm hurting. This part of me, I'm pointing to my heart.
The Bill Murray loving part hurts.
This part hurts.
You know what though? I get it. I get what Murray was thinking here.
Yeah.
You know, working with Barry Levinson, the director of this one, he's looking at this thinking, hey, this could be our Wag the Dog. And if you remember Wag the Dog.
Love Wag the Dog.
I mean, if you remember Wag the Dog with De Niro and Dustin Hoffman from the 90s, Barry Levinson knocked that one out of the park. It was smart. It was sharp. It was funny. It was prescient. It was everything a great satire should be. Difference, though. That movie had a script by David Mamet. This movie has a script by Mitch Glazer. And Mitch Glazer doesn't work that often, and I don't, you know, when you're the highlight of your entire career is Scrooged, which I like Scrooged a lot.
Yeah, it was okay. But back in the day.
But Murray improvised a heck of a lot in that.
When you give Bill that kind of leash, he does magic.
There is no leash here, this is all about the script. Yeah. It is weird, though, that this is, what, the third or fourth film this year that is directly or indirectly either based on or influenced by a great documentary. This one is also influenced and kind of based on a great documentary called Afghan Star.
And
it just
not so good.
Unlike The Walk, it's kind of a thud.
So let's get on to this week then. This week, a number of good things coming out, Burnt being one of them, as a matter of fact. Sarah, tell us a little bit about Burnt.
Well, Burnt is Bradley Cooper as an award-winning French chef. He's got two Michelin stars, which everybody who knows food, and I don't really.
Michelin
stars are like the most important thing in the world, and if you get three of them, you are As somebody says in the movie, you're Yoda.
Yeah. If you get one star, you're Luke Skywalker. Yeah. You get two, you're the guy who put Alec Guinness. So you're playing Obi-Wan.
Basically.
And if you're three, you're Yoda.
Who's Qui-Gon? Is Qui-Gon a four-star?
No, there is no four-star. Michelin only goes to three. Oh, well, so Bradley Cooper, though, he kind of...
But the question is, what if he's actually Darth Vader?
Yeah.
That did come up.
That comes up.
Mm-hmm. But so Bradley Cooper.
So he returns to London after a four-year absence because when he was in Paris, he ended up with this huge drug problem and screwed everything up, sank a restaurant, put other people that he was close to out of work. I mean, basically just screwed the pooch all over the place. Mm-hmm. He's cleaned himself up. He's shucked a million oysters.
Literally
a million oysters as penance. He comes to London, he reteams with his former group, and is going to now get that third Michelin star.
And assert his dominance in the culinary world.
It sounds like a combination of a TV show he was already in.
Kind of.
Kitchen Nightmares. Mixed with Ratatouille.
A little bit.
Anybody Can Cook, mixed with everybody's favorite cook movie of late, Chef.
Well, but also the what was the other one that came out earlier this year? The Thousand Steps or whatever.
That was last year. The 100-Foot Journey.
Yeah, get your Helen Mirren chronology popping.
Sorry.
So I haven't seen this thing. Is this
Cooper is fantastic?
Mm-hmm.
Cooper's amazing
good.
In this movie. Sienna Miller is also really good in this movie. She's this up and coming chef that he discovers and takes under his wing and. That is how they end up making this great restaurant is because he starts listening to her, she listens to him, yada yada yada, all that sort of stuff. Daniel Brühl is also in the movie. He's great.
Love Brühl.
Mm-hmm.
How's the movie?
The movie is good, not great.
Yeah.
It feels to me like BBC television.
Okay,
if you were to get rid of all of the F words in this movie, if you just got rid of every single F word. It would play on PBS on Sunday night after Downton Abbey.
Yes, Chef. Now here's the thing. I think the story, there's nothing fancy about it. There's nothing new to chew on in the story as far as culinary films go. What I think sells this film really at its core is the attention to detail in the character development that they've created. They've actually created three-dimensional characters who have real nuggets that they're wrestling with. And you see the classic, got to go through A to B to achieve C. And that is well outlined here, and I think we're given real characters to work
with. But that's Stephen Knight. I mean, so Stephen Knight is a screenwriter. John Wells directed, and John Wells, I don't know if
he's a
hit and miss filmmaker. Stephen Knight... You know, this is the screenwriter of Locke. This is the screenwriter of Dirty Pretty Things. He's a screenwriter of Eastern Promises. This dude knows how to write characters.
Yeah.
But those movies are also rather miserable and dark.
And
this one's different.
This one's
sneaky
still,
miserable?
Yeah, it's sneaky miserable.
Is anyone fighting naked in a bathhouse? Eastern Promises?
This is a movie about addiction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Bradley Cooper's chef is a messed up dude who is dealing with the repercussions of that addiction.
So it's not as frothy as the ads look.
Not at all.
Because the ads look like mainstream. Not that Chef is like a dark, depressing, hard movie, but I mean, a little more of an, I don't know, felt indie maybe just because of the level of the people in it. But this looks very glossy.
It doesn't really cop out and get glossy until the end. And even then, there's enough restraint that you're okay with it. But the end of the film is the fairy tale.
Okay.
And that is a little disconcerting.
It looks like a Coldplay song.
Well, you know what? I will give props to Bradley Cooper because I had to think about this for a second. There is one thing musically referenced in this film at a pivotal point, and I'm not giving anything away in this, but Cooper, and I believe it was probably done in an ad lib, manages to conjure up Metallica and Creeping Death. So just let your imagination run wild with that.
And the movie has probably the best riff on fast food I've ever heard.
Yeah, it really does. So, Sarah, where do you sit on it? Ultimately, theater, rent, skip?
It's a rent. Okay. I think it's a solid. There's a reason that the Weinstein Company has decided to go with a wide release instead of this big Oscar push for the film. It's not an Oscar movie, but it could be an audience movie. Mm-hmm. And I think as a rental, it's perfect.
Okay. And I'm going to sit in the theater on that one. I'm going to say this is a great date film, and it kind of primes your palate, gets you ready to go out for a meal afterward. So we're splitting the vote on that, theater and rent. That brings us to, actually, Beasts of No Nation, Brian.
Yeah, let's get miserable.
Okay. Yeah, while we're going dark.
Okay. So Beasts of No Nation, as Sarah was talking about, was sort of released two weeks ago. So if you don't know this one, this is the new film by Cary Fukunaga, who did the terrific Jane Eyre with Fassbender and Wasikowska, did Sin Nombre, but is probably best known to people for his work on the first season, aka the good season of True Detective, where he directed every episode. And it's a, not collaboration, but Netflix produced it, and they released it in theaters, but they also released it on instant day of. And though VOD has been a thing for a long time, VOD is you're still paying for the individual movie. Uh-huh. Netflix Instant is, you know, it's your own thing. It's your $10 or whatever a month. Everybody's basically got access.
You've got access to it. You don't have to pay extra.
And it does not look like a movie that's like, okay, well, it maybe has a Netflix, whatever that is, budget. It's a
full movie. Yeah, this is a movie.
And it's basically the story of a young boy whose name is Agu, who lives in an unnamed, unspecified African country where there's rebels fighting with the government and the government fighting with the rebels. And basically everybody's getting lost in the crossfire. Bad things happen to his family, and he kind of ends up alone. He ends up under the wing, so to speak, of Idris Elba, who's one of the—he's the commandant. Call me commandant. Who's your commandant of one of the rebels groups? And he basically ends up with guns in his hand and having to figure out how to grow up too fast and all that stuff. And it's
about being a child soldier.
Yeah, and it's as depressing as it sounds, but it's also quite lyrical. It's quite—I mean, it's stunningly shot. If you've seen Fukunaga's past films, I mean, they all have a real eye. Without going too much, you know, sometimes when you have a film that's really pretty, it kind of just feels like you have your pretty shots. This sits in the grisliness of some of the murders. I mean, there are scenes in this that are really, really just tough to watch. I know we're going to talk about horror movies later.
Yeah,
this is not like a fun, like, oh, this is a from an emotional and just a visceral level. Sarah, I know you saw this.
Well, two things. The young actor who plays Agu,
who's terrific,
Abraham Attah, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He's amazing. This is one of the best kid performances I've seen in years.
Oh yeah,
I mean, now, this kid is phenomenal.
And he's like about 10 or 11. I don't know if they ever say his age, but he's young.
So now, Beast of the Southern Wild, completely different movie.
Yeah. Different
but
movie.
Also had
depressing.
But also had a breakout young actor.
Yeah, this kid though.
Much more dire. I mean, nothing against Beasts of No Nation, but Quvenzhané Wallace. Wallace was very good, but I know there was some talk about like, how much is that performance, how much is this? This is clearly
this is
performance.
A performance, and the kid is genius.
Do you think this kid's going to see something Oscar-worthy?
No.
It is Oscar-worthy. That's a different conversation.
That's
another
conversation.
Yeah, give me just 1 second on that.
Okay.
It is a Oscar-worthy performance, though. That's how good this kid is.
Hmm.
The other thing I will say is kind of pulling a little bit from what Brian just mentioned about how stunning it looks visually. I missed we had a local press screening to see this in a theater. I missed that, so I ended up having to watch it on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. How's it play at home?
It plays fine at home.
Ooh, it looks great on a big screen.
I am kicking myself in the butt if you can see this in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
If a theater is playing this anywhere near you, if you have the opportunity to go out and see it, that is how you should see it. Fukunaga has done something extraordinary with the visuals here. He and his cinematographer have just elevated things to a point where it is so immersive into this world.
Mm-hmm.
It
really
it's
calls
unreal.
To mind, if I know a lot, this is another movie a lot of people didn't see, but if you saw Soderbergh's Che, particularly the first half, which has the revolution stuff in Cuba, it really kind of calls to mind that with just the denseness of the images.
Mm. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, and Elba is terrific in it. And I think, Sarah, you were going to say this. If it was a bigger movie, if it had the proper footing, if this Netflix experiment hits properly, he'd be in the supporting actor conversation.
He would probably be leading this. So Idris Elba is genius in the film.
Okay.
It's one of the best supporting performances you're going to see this year. Idris Elba's an amazing actor. He's long overdue for an Oscar nomination. It's the kind of subject matter Oscar is drawn to. It's the kind of performance that Oscar is drawn to. It hits all of the Oscar benchmarks where you would go, oh yeah, of course, the Academy is going to nominate that. The big red flag here is Oscar hates VOD.
Hates.
They hate it with a capital H.
Voters this is super VOD.
Yeah, voters do not like it at all. And this is VOD to another level entirely. This is Netflix, as Brian said. It's released in theaters, but if you have a Netflix account, you can just go into your Netflix and watch it right now and not have to pay anything extra, not have to do anything extra. Now, this has worked great for them with their television shows, and it's worked great with Amazon with their television shows, you know, with Transparent on Amazon and with House of Cards and Orange is the New Black on Netflix. For Emmys, this has been fine.
Why do you think Oscar has a problem with this? Why does the Academy have a problem?
I think they don't see it as proper filmmaking.
Exactly.
It's not honest. Even though most of the Oscar voters tend to watch stuff on screeners at home, there's just this weird disconnect.
You have two groups that sort of revolt against this.
Yeah.
The producers group,
of course.
Because, you know, they make movies in big, huge capital letters and quotation marks. And the actors. The actors don't like this also because they feel like they're not getting paid what they should be paid.
They feel it cheapens the art.
It feels it cheapens the art.
Interesting.
So, and those are the two biggest groups that vote.
Yeah.
So if those two groups are revolting.
Sucks for you.
Then your movie doesn't have a chance.
Well, but I guess we'll see.
And we'll see. I mean, this, you know, it is one of the best films of the year in a lot of ways. I'm not entirely sure it will make my top 10 at the end of the year, but it should be in that conversation.
It's very good.
Okay. So so on that real quick then, Theater Rent, Skip, you're saying see
it. I say see it in a theater.
If you can see it in a theater, see it in a theater.
Okay, you both are. Okay. So
if not,
you
know, if not, hook up that Netflix account on your best TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Wow. So Beasts of No Nation. That brings us also to Room, another one that's been garnering quite a bit of attention. And Sarah.
AKA, I'm jealous. Sarah's got to see it. I haven't got to make the screenings.
That's you and me both. Jealous. That's you and me both. Yeah. And there have been multiple screenings, but every time have missed it. So Sarah, set us up on this one. Give us a little idea what we're missing.
So Room has been out for a couple of weeks. It opens in Seattle today. It goes, I think, much wider next week. Brie Larson is going to get an Academy Award nominee. Talking again, Academy Awards. Brie Larson is going to get a Best Actress Academy Award nomination for this.
So what happens?
She is maybe the front runner. She is the mother of this little 5-year-old named Jack. She and Jack live in a place called Room. It is exactly what it sounds like. It's this tiny little room with a bed and a sink and a toilet and nothing else.
Is there a window?
And Room is there. There is a room. There is a window as a skylight. That's all there is.
So this is basically cave paintings that Socrates is talking about, or Plato, or I can't remember my.
What I didn't use Plato.
Well, it was it was the philosophy class that I took in college, where there's cave paintings, and if a person is chained to a wall and all they can see are shadows on the wall of the cave, that's all they know. All they know is black and white and gray, and that's their reality. Is that
well,
where this
and
is going?
So 5-year-old Jack has only lived in Room.
Okay.
Room is the only place he has ever known. He has just turned 5. It's his birthday. Room is the only world that he knows.
Huh. These are the cave paintings. Okay. Or the cave shadows.
Well, they are in Room for a very good reason. And it's a highly disturbing reason. And it's one you don't want to talk about too much because you don't want to give everything away.
Okay.
There is a gentleman who comes into Room every now and then. He has to come into Room by putting a special keypad number into the door to unlock it. And it locks when he comes in and it relocks when he leaves. If you use your imagination, you can figure out why Brie Larson's character has been in Room for 5 years and why Room is the only world that Jack knows.
Imagine, if you will,
especially
a world.
And so now we're in a situation where Brie Larson's mother is going to try to explain to Jack what's outside of Room. And by doing that, does that mean they are maybe going to get out of Room?
Paradigm shift.
The movie's extraordinary. It's all seen through the eyes of this 5-year-old child. Brie Larson gives one of the most complex, crafty, delicate, fragile, empowering performances you've seen this year. Joan Allen shows up in the second half of the film and just blows you away with her maternal heartbreak.
Who directed this?
The movie is directed by Lenny Abramson, who did last year that very bizarro Fassbender movie.
Frank.
He did Frank.
Oh, yes, smile.
Yes, with Fassbender in the big giant rock star in the big giant head.
Did you see
forgot about
this?
This
was very good.
Yeah.
This is a very different film. It is based on the novel by Emma Donahoe, who also wrote the screenplay. It's crafty. It's intelligent. I have certain little nitpicks with some of the other characters who show up during the second half of the film that I don't, again, I don't want to get into things.
How's the kid?
Kid is great. You know,
I've heard great things about
the kid. It's one of, again, it's a wonderful little 5-year-old performance. A lot of it is engineered by the direction. Visually, it's especially for a movie that takes place for almost the entire first hour in one confined place. Visually, it's always interesting. It keeps you on your toes. Huh. It's just a marvelous, multifaceted mesmerizer of a film.
Right.
And it talks about child endangerment and abduction and all of these things that are just, they rip you in two.
One question.
But it ends up being about family, motherhood, and togetherness. And it takes a horrifying situation and makes something uplifting out of it.
Which is what I was going to ask. If I can imagine people hearing this and going, man, sounds miserable.
And it's not. It's surprisingly, when you get to the last half hour, it's shockingly joyous.
Hmm. Okay. So you're saying this is a
the clear theater, all
clear
the way.
Theater for
clear,
you.
Clear theater all the way.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Room. All right. One. We'll
just
have to, we'll
room.
Have to put this on
I'm
our.
I'm going on Sunday. Yeah. Okay.
We'll now, Adam,
Sunday, Sunday,
not
Sunday.
The room. Not, what, stay away. You know.
Very
you're tearing me apart.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
Just.
Room. Just room. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And The Room, incidentally, which, by the way, if you're a regular listener, you may have heard us reference this once before.
God.
It's the Citizen Kane of bad films.
Manos is worse.
Yeah. It Hands of Fate?
Hands of Fate is worse.
Manos Hands of Felt is also fun. Okay. So next film talking about this week, this one also kind of a fun one that Sarah, you and I had a chance to see this last night. This is Scout's
We could
guide.
Have only got there 10 minutes later.
Right. We'll get to that.
Okay. Yeah.
Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. Now,
what kind of movie? What,
this is,
what kind of movie is this?
This is a all-out love letter to zombie films. This is one big, wet, sloppy kiss.
Fast zombies?
Fast
zombies,
zombies, slow zombies, all zombies. Every,
jogging zombies?
Take the whole genre, roll it into one. Tie a nice little bow around it.
With a heavy dose of Peter Jackson and Dead Alive.
And a heavy dose of precocious high school students who are speaking way too snarky and way too funny for their own good. Those three students happen to be Ben, Carter, and Augie. It's Ty Sheridan, Logan Miller, and Joey Morgan. They're basically scouts, adventure scouts. And they go out on one last camping excursion only to discover, as they sneak out of camp, the whole town has been overrun with this zombie virus, and they're now left to defend themselves, also aided by who turns out to be a cocktail waitress, Denise, which is Sarah Dumont, one of Maxim's sexiest women alive.
Maxim is still a thing?
Apparently.
FHM?
I looked this up last night. I was like, who was that? Anyway, so that's her story. She's a cocktail waitress who can wield a shotgun.
At a stripper bar. She's not a stripper, though.
At a
not
strip
zombie
bar.
Yeah. Strippers, though.
No. There are no, there's a zombie stripper.
And I had to chuckle because this is in such loving spirit of zombie films. The establishments always have great names. The establishment, the name of the strip club is called Lawrence of Arabia.
Heard it before.
Come on.
I've heard that before. That's been around for decades.
I know.
Lawrence of Arabia.
But this
okay,
is
so I got some questions. Know. I got some questions as someone who hasn't seen this movie. There's a lot of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Tucker and Dale vs. Evil,
Shaun
of the Dead,
Zombieland.
Yep. And I'm just curious, on the level of your kind of broad comedy horror, where is this sitting? Because that's a genre that's filling up kind of rapidly.
So I think if you go with like recent ones,
mm-hmm.
if you go with recent zombie parody slash homage whatevers, I would actually say, other than the Bill Murray sequence, which is genius, it's better than Zombieland.
Yep,
it's not as good as Shaun of the Dead.
Well, that's a high bar.
I know, but it sits between the two kind of comfortably.
And you know, I will go with you on that. Sean, the thing is
other than the Bill Murray sequence, which was genius.
Right.
Like more, I'm a fan of that movie.
Yeah. So Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse also makes exquisite use of, I don't know, the weaponry that gets involved and their crafty scoutiness. I mean, just the overall send-up.
I feel like
I wanted more crafty.
I see that in all of them.
I wanted more crafty scoutiness. I will say, you call your movie Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. I want the scouts actually using things they've learned in scouting throughout the film to survive the zombie apocalypse.
Well,
it's not really
like Zombieland in the rule.
I guess that's true.
I guess you were.
But it's not really until, you know, they get ready for the big battle at the end where they really put their scout training into action.
Does this thing run out of steam? Because a lot of...
No. It actually picks up steam.
Okay.
I didn't name drop Peter Jackson just to name drop Peter Jackson.
PJ.
This movie owes a heck of a lot to both Bad Taste...
And Dead Alive.
Especially Dead Alive.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a whole hardware store sequence
Yeah.
That is just
lifted
this
right from
lifted
it.
Completely yeah. from it. Nice. And yet it works. Yeah. And it's hysterical and gross and disgusting all at the same time.
And let's not forget that Cloris Leachman also makes an appearance in here. David Koechner.
Her last appearance.
Right. I mean, it's there's
zombie cats.
Yeah, zombie cats. You're a cat fan.
Yeah, right.
Have you ever seen zombie cats?
I don't know. Probably
zombie deer.
Here's the funny thing about this, and I will say this. I will say this purely from a selfish perspective. So as we know, I did some work a number of years ago in a zombie film that was called The Book of Zombie.
I've seen it.
You've seen it. You are. And The Book of Zombie was written with the same intent that this film was written, only this film achieves everything that The Book of Zombie wasn't able to
achieve. They
probably
had a bigger budget.
Yeah,
you guys
more
are like $9.
We had like $5. But the Book of Zombie was written with this intent. This one actually pulls it off. And so to that, I raised my glass and I said, congratulations, you've reached the brass ring on that one for zombie horror, purely out of the fact that
Arnold Schwarzenegger's son gets eviscerated.
Yeah, we wondered about that because there was actually we were looking at the
name?
Credits.
Patrick Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, he's awesome. Actually in there. So, but fun nuttiness for me. I'm going to say
zombie fellatio.
That does happen. So, my opinion on this, I'm going to sit in the theater on this because of the fact I think for Halloween. You know what? You need some good, solid entertainment. And if you're going to the theaters, going theater.
Are you
on,
a theater,
Scouts
Sarah?
So there was this really, really, really horrible EDM zombie...
Dead Dylan thing.
Whatever thing that lasted like 12 minutes.
What's a Dead Dylan?
Is that
like a musician?
EDM musician.
But it goes,
I know
but it
EDM,
went,
but...
It, yeah, no, but this went on forever. And I have nobody's told me yet if this is actually going to appear before this film.
I don't think it is.
If it's not appearing before this film, then I would say go see it in the theater. If it is appearing before this film,
show up 10 minutes late.
Show up 10 minutes late or wait for it to be on VOD because this movie is part of Paramount's experiment to get new release films to VOD faster. And the moment this falls to 300 theaters, it's going to be available on VOD.
Huh.
Much also like Paranormal Activity.
The Ghost Dimension.
The moment that falls to 300 theaters, it's going to be available on VOD, which is the big thing right now that there are theaters that are refusing to show both of these films, even though Paramount is going to share the VOD profits with the theaters.
Interesting.
There are theaters that are refusing to do this. I don't have an issue if you end up wanting, because it's going to be at 300 theaters awfully quick. So if you wait for VOD, you're not going to be shooting yourself
in the
foot.
Ride the fence.
Okay. So where do you sit, Sarah?
Mild theater or mild wait theater. For VOD.
Okay, so that sums it up for us on that. Brian, our brand is Crisis.
Speaking of movies based on documentaries, this movie has Sandra Bullock starring as famous campaigner James Carville. And that is actually accurate. If you've seen the ads for this, this is the movie with Sandra Bullock going to Bolivia. It's kind of a down and out, drunken mess of a person who's trying to win an election for somebody who's way behind for president, and you see Billy Bob Thornton wandering around with bald head and go, that guy must be the James Carville version, but he is not. Not that I think this is a problem, it's just one of the weird ticks of the movie, and it's a David Gordon Green film, and if you don't know David Gordon Green, he's done a whole bunch of stuff like Your Highness and Joe and George Washington. He's kind of turning into maybe a younger this generation of Gus Van Sant, where he does these movies that are these Hollywood movies that you just kind of get a sense that he's kind of paychecking them. Not that he's doing a bad, but he's just doing what Hollywood would expect of these so he can fund his smaller projects. Who this film really belongs to is George Clooney and Grant Heslov. And if you don't know Grant Heslov, he's an actor, but he also produces a lot of Clooney's work. He's done Argo, Men Who Stare at Goats. What's the other big one?
Good Night and Good Luck.
Movies that are political, but other than Good Night and Good Luck, they're usually not too political. You know, it's like it's got a light brain in there. Like if you're going to this movie, do you expect?
Yeah, and the only one that's been great is Good Night and Good Luck.
Yeah. And this isn't great either, but I'd say it's worthwhile. Bullock is very funny in it, and it's very
She's
very good. I'm not always a Bullock person, as I think you know.
Yeah.
And it's just her trying to figure out how to get this guy who's basically a rich prick who used to be president popular again and shaping it. And it
played by the great Joaquin De La Mita, who never gets...
Latino Phil Hartman.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he deserves more roles than he usually gets, and I think he's very good in this.
Yeah, and this isn't quite Ace in the Hole, But I mean, this is a movie that's trying to talk about the cynicism of running an election.
Yeah, I know it wants to be Primary Colors or Ace in the Hole. I think those are both good.
I think Primary Colors, it's not as good as that. On par in that the fact that, I mean, I don't think Primary Colors is especially great. This is not an especially deep movie. I mean, Sarah, where are you on this, generally speaking?
I think the acting's fantastic, especially by Bullock. I think Bullock is terrific. I think the movie is unbalanced to the extent that it's really difficult to watch it.
Do you think it's consistently unbalanced?
I think it's just the end. I think it's consistently unbalanced. Mm. I think David Gordon Green, there are times where you feel like he's making one of his small films, like a Prince Avalanche or a Snow Angels or a Joe, and then suddenly he's making one of his broad comedies, like a Pineapple Express. And those two worlds very rarely work in the context of the same film, unfortunately. Sometimes they do, but that's rare and not often.
I actually find the balance pretty comfortable in the fact that the movie, at least till the end, is not trying to have too much of a heart. Like, you have, there's this younger person who's part of the campaign team, and you go to his home, and you kind of feel like, all right, here's the part where Bullock's going to learn about the true struggles of real Bolivians. And it doesn't quite go there. It has it, but it doesn't luxuriate and try to, like, get a whole bunch of sugary cloyingness for it. And then the end comes, and
it's based on a fantastic documentary from Rachel Boynton,
also called Our Brand Is Crisis.
That documentary is amazing, and the story is not as close to what you actually.
This story is nothing similar.
Okay, so where would you kind of fall on this ultimately? Because I mean,
I'm a very solid rental. I think it's totally worth watching. Maybe not rushing out to see, but Bullock's very good in it. I laughed a good bit. It's solid, well done movie.
Maybe. Okay, Sarah.
I'm not particularly happy with this film.
Oh,
I am, because Bullock is so good, and there are moments in it that I really liked. I am a rental, but it's a rental with a lot of reservations.
Okay. Our Brand Is Crisis, two rentals. That was kind of simple in that regard. Halloween, we are on the heels of Halloween right now.
Can't wait.
Tomorrow.
Love.
And
I mean, technically it's 2 days from now, but tomorrow for people that are listening.
I think the exposure we have had has been to horror films pretty, extensive. So
they're constant.
The idea being, what are our two of this millennium, we said top. I don't know if I can really summarize.
You don't have a two favorite? You can't have a favorite?
There are ones that come to mind, but I can't say they're my top favorites.
Oh,
I mean,
goodness.
But horror films of this millennium.
Sarah, you want to pick your first?
Round robin. Let's do 1-1-1, 1-1-1. So,
okay.
Right, Brian?
Just straight up favorites for scares, 28 Days Later. Danny Boyle's, I'll just say masterpiece. I mean, it's intense.
Fantastic.
Fast zombies, not zombies, whatever you want to call it. It's freaky. It's got great performances. It talks about how humans are as scary as man. It's fantastic.
Yeah. All right. So you're saying Danny
28
Boyle.
28 Days Later, Danny Boyle. Love, love, love.
And I'm saying Cabin in the Woods falls on
as
well.
Very
because
good.
It has so many callbacks to so many horror, avenues and ventures of the decades past. And, you know, Whedon leading the pack on that one. It's an amusing film. So Cabin in the Woods for me. Sarah, how about you?
I'm going with Neil Marshall's masterpiece,
Love.
The Descent,
yes.
Which is about a bunch of female adventurists who they get together, they bond every year, they go do these extraordinary things together, and in the wake of one of their main members, the death of her entire family, they decide to go caving, and bad things happen in the cave.
Bad things.
Very bad things
and
happen
one of the
in
things
the cave.
I love
and it's
about the,
oh, so good.
One of the things I love about that film is if you like gore, it's got gore. If you want jump scares, it has jump scares. If you want tension, it's got tension.
You want
it basically does a bit of everything.
It's got it all. It's Neil Marshall's best film, bar none.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
So my other one is a little offbeat. Maybe you wouldn't qualify it a horror. I qualify it as horror. And that's got to be Ben Wheatley's Kill List from a few years ago, which is the story of two British hitmen who used to be soldiers who basically end up with a list of people to murder. And everything gets a little weirder with each person they kill and builds to a breathtaking, just brutal, unsettling ending. Love, love this movie. If you can find it, I think it might be on Netflix.
It
if
is.
Not, find it somewhere and watch it.
It's fantastic. Great. You need to see it.
And what was that one again?
Kill List.
Kill List.
Do you like The Wicker Man? You need to watch this movie.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The classic Wicker Man or the newer
and
Wicker Man?
And I recommended Kill List to somebody, and she wrote it down to remember to watch later, and then her coworker found on her desk Kill List.
Oh, jeez. Like,
what is this? Yeah. What the hell is this?
This went over well. Wow, nice.
But she ended up liking it.
Okay. Next on my list happens to be Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And it's,
so you like the comedy horror?
See, I do. Now, the horror that really scares me is usually the supernatural that feels to me like it could actually happen, kind of like The Exorcist. And I just don't
neither
think
of these movies are that.
I don't think there have been very good demon films as of late that really keep me up at night and make me think. That seem plausible. So in that regard, I go for the fun, I go for the laughter and the send up of horror, and that's Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I saw it at SIFF a number of years ago, long before it was ever in the theaters, like on a major release, and I was just chomping at the bit, telling everyone I could about this film. I was the prophet of Tucker and Dale, and I wanted it out so bad. And then it just took them forever.
Kind of came and went.
Yeah,
and
it was a fizzle in the theaters, but.
Ironically, it was one of the front runners for Golden Space Needle that year.
Yeah,
It almost won. Well, for you then, I'm gonna change my answer.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna go with a movie from this year that not a lot of people saw, but it's about demons. It's about ghosts. It's a Lucio Fulci meets Sam Raimi meets John Carpenter throwback. It's called We Are Still Here, and it is freaking amazing. It's got Barbara Crampton and Andrew Sencek as two grieving parents who move into this secluded farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, and the old residents are still there.
They are still here.
Oh, wow.
And the movie is freaking awesome. It reminds you a lot of The Fog meets almost any Lucio Fulci movie about ghosts and zombies.
The Good Fog.
Yeah.
Carpenter's Fog.
Carpenter's
not
Fog.
Tom Welling
and
Fog.
And it's a slow burn. It focuses on the characters. It makes them human. It makes them whole. It makes them somebody that you care about. And then the last 20 minutes of the movie is gore-palooza, but gore-palooza in a way that is terrifying and awesome. You need to see this movie. We Are Still Here. It's out on Blu-ray like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. Rent it, watch it,
we'll do.
Buy it, see it.
We Are Still Here in The Descent from Sarah, Kill List, and
28 Days Later.
28 Days Later for Brian. I'm saying Cabin in the Woods, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And that's your homework for this weekend. If you're not going out to the theaters, you can get on those right away.
Great horror.
Straight away, as they would say. We've also got something fun coming up here that we're going to be doing live.
Northwest Film Forum.
We're talking Monday, November 9th, 7 o'clock. You can come out and meet us, talk with us. And you know what we're discussing? What are we discussing?
Crap.
We are discussing, exactly.
Bad movies.
The worst of the worst.
The worst of the worst.
We love to hate. And
as homework, watch The Boy Next Door,
a movie
reviewed on one of our first episodes, so I couldn't talk about this.
Okay.
And my opinion is...
Should it be available in a couple weeks? Yes.
Yeah. November 9th.
So November 9th.
Come here, my opinion.
At the Northwest Film Forum.
That's
you
right.
can find more information at our website, cinemasquabble.com. You can also find it at the Northwest Film Forum's website, which is northwestfilmforum.org.
We'll be tweeting... Where to find it? When to find it?
Yes.
How to go? And
it's a free event.
Free event.
You gotta pay for your alcohol.
Right. Free event. But
as you do.
With the happy hour leading up to that, so you can get your drinks, you can get your popcorn, and we'll have clips from the various films we're going to be talking about, so you'll be able to see just how bad the bad really is.
We're going to keep them a secret, but you obviously know The Boy Next Door is one of them.
It has to be.
The rest we're going to keep a little bit of a secret.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. So that's the Cinema Squabble, Cinema Bomb Squad Live, Monday, November 9th, 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Forum.
Monday. Be there.
I can almost guarantee, not promise, but basically guarantee that I will be singing and funny voices.
Hey, and it's just so we know. So it's going to be the three of us, but it's also the return of Movie Guy Brian.
OG.
Brian Teibel, the original Cinema Squabbler.
And Eric Samdahl will be there. And Tim, we were mentioning this to Tim Hall.
Tim Hall
he may even show up. Yep. So you know, the people you hear on this podcast, you can meet us in person and in the flesh.
I'm taller than you might think.
You are. You're actually one of the tallest of the bunch here.
I'm going to be wearing heels.
Okay.
Just letting you know
there
that
you
now.
There you go. So in summary, what have we talked about this evening?
A lot.
The last Witch Hunter.
The trio of terrible.
The trifecta from last week of crap. Rock the Casbah, the Witch Hunter, the last Witch Hunter.
The last Witch
Hunter.
Gem
and the Holograms.
Last one.
Pass, and pass. This week, though, Burnt getting a rental and a theater from us, looking at Beasts of No Nation, getting two strong theater suggestions. Room, just called Room. Sarah was the only one who saw it, but is adamant that this is a theater rental. Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, getting two theaters from the Squabblers. And our brand is Crisis, two rentals from the Squabblers.
Hoy.
So that is where we are at. That is a lot.
Hoy.
Hoy.
So, projects you're working on, Brian?
I don't know. I haven't got anything.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to write about, it's Oscar season. I'm planning on writing about excellent performances that have zero chance of getting nominated.
A lot of those. Sarah, how about you?
I have an interview that I did with Sarah Gavron, the director of Suffragette, that I will hopefully have up on the website next week. And if not, it'll be in the SGN the week after for the Seattle release.
And I do believe you both have reviews of Spectre coming in the next few days.
Right. Yes. We are unable
can't
to
say
talk
about it till Monday.
Talk about Monday, Monday.
Spectre. So, yeah, can't talk about Spectre. We can say we saw it. There we go. That's all we can say.
I can't.
We saw it. So,
I didn't see it.
Yeah, you didn't. But there you go. So more discussion of Spectre in several weeks.
Yep.
And again, we hope to see you out at the Northwest Film Forum Monday, November 9th, 7 o'clock for the Cinema Bomb Squad Live.
Come press our flesh at 6:30.
Indeed. So this has been Cinema Squabble, episode number 22. You can find us at cinemasquabble.com. You can find us at iTunes, all the usual channels. If you can, give us those likes, the thumbs up, all the positive comments and suggestions. We're always willing to listen. Well, at least listen. We may not say anything nice back, but we'll at least listen.
And have a happy Halloween.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes.
Watch out for the really taffy-like candy. That's what sticks to the teeth. Wait.
Okay.
And many thanks to Sprints Arbogast and Squawking Vultures. Sprints being our producer this evening. Squawking Vultures doing post-production on this production. How about those tubular bells?
Tubular bells. That's the X. You got it.
Right. So, Exorcist, we were practicing this earlier. Hit it, Sarah.